Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Divine Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Highlights of Upanishads. The title is Kathopanishads, presented by Swami Jyotirmayananda. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Sarve Vedaya cha yata padamananti tapansi sarvani cha yad vadanti yadichanto brahmacharyam charanti tatte padam sangrahena bravimi om ityetat. That supreme abode which is praised by the Vedas, for attaining which one practices brahmacharya. Brahmacharya for the general masses in India it simply means a person who does not enter into household life, lives a life of celibacy with a mind focused on developing devotion to God. That's called practice of brahmacharya. But that's shallow meaning. The literal meaning is your conduct that allows you to attain Brahman. Everything that you do, if you do speak up harsh words and create to highlight your ego, inflate your ego, you are stepping beyond brahmacharya, you are breaking it. You are speaking lies, you are doing any type of negative karma. It is against your movement towards Brahman. Brahmacharya means all great qualities, all qualities that go to form righteous conduct, they must develop. So, all spiritual seekers, those who are interested in attaining Brahman, they practice brahmacharya. And other austerities, austerity term called tapasya, tapas. Tapas is a name for focusing the mind, allowing the mind to be focused on different objects of meditation, depending upon your level of attainment. But it's a concentrated movement of the mind, that is called austerity. Brahmacharya and austerity, these two terms are used by Yama to just highlight points relating to spiritual sadhana. All different disciplines that you do for attaining liberation. And what is the one simple mantra for all that you are doing is for what? And that what, can it be stated in one simple word? Yes, that's the mantra Om. It is for Om you are doing all that scriptures talk about. The goal of all religions, the goal of all your austerities, Yama says, I will describe in brief, it is Om. Now it becomes a mantra. You have to understand now Om is a formula. Etad yevaksharam brahma, etad yevaksharam param. Etad yevaksharam jnatva yo yadichyati tasya yat tasya tat. This letter Om is indeed Brahman. This is indeed imperishable. One who knows this word attains whatever he desires. Before I get into deeper meaning, let me recite to you the next verse, which also deals with the same Om. Etadalambanam sheshtam, etadalambanam param, etadalambanam gyatva brahmaloke mahiyate. This is the best support, Om. Your mind has to be supported by Om, not by the world, not by all things that you are imagining. This is the highest support. Having understood this support, one attains glory in the region of Brahman. It's a figurative statement. If you have understood this support and pursued Om, led by Om, you attain liberation. Knowing Brahman, you become Brahman. In this advanced state of knowledge, to know is to become. In the relative world, is to know is just to stay the same. You become more intelligent, can compete with others who have in the field of intellectual knowledge, but you don't become. But knowing Brahman imply a revelation. I am that. Just like you are wandering in your dream, knowing that it is a dream, you cut down the entire dream atmosphere and wake up. But during in the dream itself, your knowing process may be a limited process. In your dream, in your garden, there is an apple tree. You go there and count the apples. You didn't know there were dozen of apples there. Now you know there were dozen of apples. That also is knowledge. Knowing dozen of apples there doesn't make you any different. But knowing you are a dream, you are dreaming. You completely move away from the dream. You wake up. The knowledge of Brahman is kind of awakening. And how does the Om fit in? The Vedas have evolved. The source of all mantras. Om in itself is the essence of all the Vedas, all the teachings. In fact, it is recognized in other religions with variation. When you talk about Amen, that's a modification of Om. Ameen, that's another modification of Om. But without going into all those details, I'll just focus on Om and its importance. Om is made up of four points. There are three letters, Sanskrit letters. A, U, Ma. A, U, M. And the last one is something subtle. That subtle has no expression. But that which has no expression is the goal. That is described as Turiya, the transcendental. I'll give you just this simple plan of understanding. A relates to physical reality. Your personality has three levels, physical, subtle, causal. The entire world can be studied that way. But to keep this study simple, just focus on your own self. Physical reality, physical body. When you are practicing Om mantra, first your focus is, I am the physical body. But the physical body is inseparably related to the universal body. Physical body is inseparably related to the universe of matter. This is not a big science. This is just simple. But how is it human mind doesn't give importance to that fact? Day by day you look at yourself in the mirror. Don't you realize cauliflowers and various vegetables have become your nose? You are looking at a part of the universe. You look at a wave in the ocean. That wave is a part of the ocean. Your physical body is a part of the universal matter. Allow that mind to have the grip of that. If I am the body, that I am is all over the universe. I am the body, therefore I am. I am the trees. I am the fruits. I am the vegetables. I am the forests. I am the oceans. I am the sun, moon and stars. I am the entire universe of matter. Does it matter? Let's see. Meditation on Om. As you begin, your mind simply is repeating Om, Om. But your focus is the first step of universalizing your sense of identity. First sense of identity, I am physical body. universalize it. Therefore, I am the universe. Another Upanishad gives more details. When you are identified with the physical body, the Sanskrit term for that identity is called Vishwa. Soul identified with the physical body is called Vishwa. That Vishwa is soul. When it begins to expand into universe, soul identified with the universal is called Virat. That Vishwa within you is Virat. That type of meditation is A aspect of Om. Now come to U aspect. As you advance with A aspect, your mind comes to the grip of understanding that matter is completely dependent on mind. Can you talk about matter without using your mind? Can you show the matter existing without mind? So why not be wiser? Physical matter is an expression of mind. Its reality is mind. So, I am physical body is a kindergarten knowledge. I am mind, now you are advanced. You are nothing but mind. And matter doesn't exist without the mind. Matter reflects within the mind. Since I am the mind, here again there is individual mind and the cosmic mind. Your individual mind is related to the cosmic mind. How can you separate it? How can you call your mind my mind with little ego dominating the mind? Your thoughts and feelings are coming from countless sources. It has a universal basis behind it. Therefore, introduce into your mind you aspect of Om. Identified with individual mind, the jiva, the soul is called Tejas. And the universal subtle body is called Hiranyagarbha. Tejas within you is in relation with Hiranyagarbha. In other words, your mind is in contact with universal mind. You will begin to realize it more and more as you allow the mind to relax. If the rattish ego doesn't jump around too much, then you begin to listen to the melody of universal harmony. In the stillness of your mind, your thinking process goes beyond your imagination because you are in touch, begin to come in touch with a cosmic source. And your mind is never separated from that cosmic source. It's like a wave is never separated from the ocean. That's U aspect of Om. M aspect of Om, even this mind and its functions, they are projections of the unconscious process of the mind. The impressions of your unconscious, they are dominating your thoughts. All the thinking that you do, all the feeling that you do, the big storehouse comes from your unconscious, which you don't see. So the real mind of yours is not the conscious mind. Reality of you is not, firstly, you are not the body. Then came to realize, am I the mind? It's one movement higher. But not this conscious mind, which is just nothing compared to the unconscious within you. That's called causal state. Now you come to realize I am the causal body. Therefore, I am related to the cosmic causal body. Individual causal body is called prajna. In this context, it implies soul that doesn't have anything to do with the world, doesn't know about you. The world is just avidya, ignorance. I will not go into too much detail. In sleep, you become prajna. You are identified with causal body. Therefore, the whole world has no meaning for you. But that prajna relates itself is a wave in the ocean of Ishvara, God. God who controls the entire universe. Constantly sleeping in the milky ocean. To that God you belong when you go to sleep. So at your deepest level, You are a wave of God. In every level, you are in physical level, you are a wave of matter. Matter, ocean of matter is viewed by you as God's expression. In subtle way, your tejas in you is identified with Hiranyagarbha. The identity with astral body is transformed into identity with the universal mind. In the subtlest level, your identity with the unconscious is identified with the identity with the entire causal unconscious of the entire universe. That unconscious of the universe is God, Ishvara, the controller. The term God again has another. Beyond Ishvara is Brahman, the absolute. That's the fourth. So when you are chanting Om, A merges in you. The physical concept merges in mental. Mental merges into unconscious level. And the unconscious is transcended in the fourth. You go beyond the three layers of Maya, illusion. Physical, astral, causal. You go into transcendental. All is presented to you by a simple word, Om. The sages were so profound in their psychology. They brought Om in the day-to-day language, old-time Sanskrit. Whenever you have to say yes, instead of saying yes, Sanskrit word is Om. You agree with it, Om. Om is a word of affirmation. It is. It is the only thing. That's what Yama gave to Nachiketa. He started the Brahma Gyan.
Gurudev, I wanted to ask you, besides giving unconditional love in our relationships, is there anything else we can do for others to love us unconditional?
Unconditional love should not be confined just within the family. It's the nature of the soul to love all. The external modes of love may be different, but to be spiritually advanced, remember the Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, the whole world is your family. Even from the point of view of soul moving from body to body, you have moved through countless families, and there isn't any family to which you are not related, thinking that way. From another point of view, the entire world is all interrelated. However, when we say love all, you don't have to make a quantitative effort. It should be just like a flower has its fragrance. Waft your fragrance more. Where it goes, how much it covers, doesn't matter. Love God and allow it to express. According to the situation, circumstances, people who come, how much can you understand them? Sometimes love doesn't mean you have to do some charity work. Someone is shouting at you. How much can you handle it to make the person feel better in spite of the shouting, feel devoted to you, feel obliged to you, feel being helped by you? All that potentiality is there. You can make even an enemy friendly towards you by your good act. You can make a friend a profounder friend. You make your child, any relative, more in touch with a deeper self within them. But it's easily said, but it all implies many things. Sometimes simple acts of just a smile at a person. Sometimes act of saying things, sometimes your inner meditation. The central point behind it is to love God and realize the world is God's expression. God is the reality behind all living beings, as well as all inert beings. So how much can I be good-hearted? And how much good-hearted can be expanded? That should be everyone's focus. And it is profoundly selfish. It's big S. When you love, allow love to develop, no one is more enjoying it than you. The secret of increasing inner joy.
Thank you.
Gurudev, you spoke about love, and I had a question that how do you differentiate between love and raga? I mean, love is very parallel to attachment. So, what is the difference?
How do you differentiate between sugar and that which doesn't cause diabetic problems, stevia? Just like in the practical world, mind finds the way to deal with situations that seem alike. Now, I'm just leading to better understanding. Understanding it. Raga and love, they go together. But if you advance, you go on moving away from raga and allow the love to develop more. If you are not following the spiritual path, love moves away and raga goes on increasing. Then it is called moha. You are not loving. Moha is developing. That's the reality of the mind in every stage. So how much you can have prem, not raga, that you determine. Just like food is given to you, how much you are going to assimilate, how much you want. That choice is made at that very moment when you are facing. If you are healthier, your choice becomes automatically more healthy. So if you are continuing with your sadhana, japa, etc., then instead of raga that leads to moha, delusion, you begin to develop, you like your child or like someone, and you try to create a satsanga, try to help the person to be better, to figure out what really is the problem with the person whom you love, and what can make that person whom you love better, discover more health, more joy. When a mother wants to love her child, she wants to see the child healthy, not just to stay in the arms. But there may be mother who doesn't want that way, just wants to be. Then in that case, it is delusional love. In other words, all that becomes the project of life, purpose of life. To have every relationship meaningful, it must serve a purpose in your spiritual movement. If it doesn't, then you are just cluttering up your whole, like in a hall, you bring so many party and clutter up everybody. And then end up saying, I love you all. And they're all drunk.
Swamiji, I have for a long time had great respect for Nelson Mandela. And I know that he didn't die because his spirit is eternal. However, for some reason, there is a sense of sadness. And I wanted to ask you what would be the best way to, how can I say, like, understand at a deeper level that, because it's, I know it, but it doesn't seem that I am able to accept it. Or so I just wanted to ask you about that. Thank you.
As a human being, you have to always understand there are certain limitations in as a human being. But while limitations exist, the deeper movement is not dependent on your limitations. For example, each time you use a cell phone has a lot of limitations. But the message that comes through it, that doesn't depend upon the way the cell phone has been made. Keeping that understanding, as a human being, when you are separated from a loved one, there will be pain. Whenever you are injured, there will be pain, even though you know I am not the body. But that pain will not deprive you from your deeper relation. So, that pain is a part of life, and that is a virtue. that shows a tender-heartedness in a human being, that experiences pain at the sufferings of others. But at the same time, it is that which triggers your soul to become more and more close to God. And your good-heartedness and tender-heartedness inspires others. So it's a double-tongue language. Deep down, you are untouched. But in the practical world, you should be tender-hearted. You should not walk away arrogantly seeing sufferings of people, saying, I don't care, I am Brahman. That is in the Ramayana, there is this parable. Great sage Valmiki emerged out of profound samadhi which had gone on for a long time. He's enlightened. And first thing he sees, two birds are playing with great joy. And suddenly a hunter shoots down one. The other one cries. And the heart of the sage melts. And he scolds that fowler, the fowl of the situation. But in that tenderness, he envisions pain that affects all human beings. And his heart began to flow with inspiration and create a whole Ramayana, how to develop devotion to God that will cure pain and suffering. So his tender-heartedness for a little bird didn't obstruct his overall love for the Supreme. Both go together.
Thank you, Swamiji.
Well, Swamiji, we were speaking of Dharma earlier. I was wondering, a lot of us find ourselves in a situation where we are in a job that's very difficult, and we would like to, me personally, I would like to have thoughts of leaving my job and devoting myself more to my practice. And I was wondering, by escaping my job, would that be defeating my purpose?
First, to understand, you are always in a world of relativity, in a world that is relative to situations. Always there is certain limitation. You have to overall figure out within yourself if leaving the job can make you more devoted to sadhana, more devoted to dharma. But your judgment should not be sentimental. If you leave your job and then suffer from the idea that you have no money or something of that nature, then in that case you are hurting yourself. Now you left the job, you don't have the nasty boss with you, but you become the nastier boss within yourself. So therefore, understand the need for patience, the need for every situation is a kind of challenge. A situation you cannot alter, then you have to simply endure it and not be affected by it. Do your best in that situation to be good in spite of the limitations. Let the boss be what he is. But your virtue is that, again, is an opportunity for dharma. It is not the boss may be whatever he may be. But your dharma is, how much can I endure it? How can I bless him in spite of his constant curses? How can I impact my goodness on him so that his mind begins to see it? And if it is not happening, let God make it happen. If it doesn't happen, then again, I must do my duty in spite of it. That becomes your dharma. The question of adharma arises when the boss wants you to be involved in a negative project. The boss has a project of cheating someone. He wants your help. So then it becomes you need to put your foot down. Okay, Ashwin has his medical message.
Before that, Swamiji. Okay. I would like to understand the state of pragya a little more, if you can elaborate.
Prajna term is used for soul identified with the causal body. There prajna means pra-ajna. Ajna is ignorant. Especially you are ignorant. All that you know is ignorance. Even in deep sleep you know. But what you know is, when you wake up, say, what did you know when you were sleeping? I knew nothing. But what's most profound, it is that substance, you knew nothing, spreads out in your dream experience and spreads out in the waking world. But that illusion mind doesn't understand. Try to understand now. When I say it spreads out in waking world, anything of the world, put your finger on it, ask yourself, do you know it? Answer will be yes, but not all of it. There is always unknown hidden behind everything you know. That unknown is a common denominator of all your knowledge, variable knowledges. So it is that ignorance that is tricking your mind by displaying itself in countless names and forms. That's waking state. The same ignorance exists in a dream state. In dream state, same thing. You don't know, and then that form of negativity is deeper than waking state. In deep sleep state, ignorance is simple, frank. So when you wake up, you say, I knew nothing, ignorance. But I had a dream. But when we are talking about dream, that also is nothing but ignorance. And in the waking world, you remember so many things of the past, present and future. In a broader context, all this is divine leela. Brahman alone exists, jagan mithya. So ultimately, it is your ignorance that is being experienced by you in waking state, in dream state, in sleep state. Therefore, your identity with the in your causal state, in the deep sleep state, the soul is called prajna, soul that is especially ignorant, but that soul is related to Ishvara, God. God also is ignorant about the world. The world doesn't exist for him. The entire world is his maya, magic. A magician sees people affected by his magic, but he himself cannot be affected by that magic. A magician can take $1 bill and show $100 shining before the eyes of others, but in his eyes is the only one. So Ishvara and Prajna, they relate. In all the three, Vishwa relates to Virat, Tejasa relates to Hiranyagarbha, Prajna relates to Ishvara. Subtle meaning is that all your experiences are avidya, ignorance. All that God creates is through Maya. Maya and avidya are similar. That's what it implies. But, put the term Prajna, that's a different thing. That's for intuitional intellect. Prajna is different. Prajna is intuitional. Sthita prajna. Sometimes you don't even turn the word around and still it's, you are well, but if you call it well, you are not well. And the well and well is the same word. Depends on the context. And we'll hear more about it. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.